Ladies and gentlemen, as you've heard on the news, Bin Laden, the most wanted man in the world, well, wanted in one sense and unwanted in another, has been killed by American forces in Islamabad, coming on top of the killings in Tripoli. Big wig. According to reports, his body has been buried at sea so that his burial place will not become a terrorist shrine. In an almost exultant address to the nation, President Obama said that the death marked the most significant achievement to date in the US efforts to defeat Al-Qaeda. But what does the death of the world's best-known terrorist mean for the US and for the young jihadists for whom he was a role model? On the Blower from Canberra, Professor Clive Williams, visiting fellow at the Strategic and Defence Studies Centre at the ANU. Clive is the author of Terrorism Explained, and we welcome back on the Blower from Cambridge Dr. Fazana Sheikh, Associate Fellow for the Asia Programme at Chatham House. And among Fazana's books is Making Sense of Pakistan. Welcome to you both, Fazana. When we spoke a few weeks ago, you said that Pakistan had serious issues with the presence of US ground forces in the country. How concerned is Islamabad that it was these same ground forces that killed bin Laden?
Well, if there is some concern about those ground forces responsible for the death of bin Laden, they haven't yet surfaced. I think it's fair to say that the political, military and intelligence establishment in Pakistan is possibly in a state of shock. As we now know, they were not taken into confidence by the United States in mounting this operation. And I think the fact that bin Laden was actually discovered to be living in Abbottabad, a northern garrison town that is known to be the heart of the military establishment, will have caused a deep embarrassment in Pakistan. So at the moment, no one is yet saying anything. The government has just issued a statement assuring the public that this was a U.S. operation. The government, you have to understand, is in a bit of a fix because so intense is the mood of anti-U.S. sentiment in Pakistan that it cannot actually be claiming too much credit in helping mount an operation to kill a man who is still regarded by many Muslims as a hero and who still enjoys iconic status. At the same time, obviously, the government is also deeply embarrassed, I'm sure, if not angry, that the trump card and the very prize, the objective indeed of this war on terror, should have been snitched under its very noses by U.S. Special Forces.
Not only snitched under their noses, but in a mansion 40 kilometres from Islamabad, in the sort of area you wouldn't expect to find the world's most famous terrorist.
That's right, because, I mean, until now, of course, Pakistan's military and intelligence establishment and its political leadership have all claimed that, well, you know, they don't know where Osama bin Laden is, nobody knew, and, you know, I suppose, had he been found in some sort of remote cave in North Waziristan, they might still have been able to maintain some semblance of plausible deniability. Mm. But I think the very fact, as I said, that he's been found within a stone's throw of the political capital, within a stone's throw of general military headquarters in Rawalpindi, is bound to raise suspicions about who knew and how far up this knowledge went.
Clive, were you astonished to find him, or that he was found in this improbable area?
Yes, I would have expected he was in a much more remote area, and perhaps that was the a clever aspect of it, was that he was hiding out of sight, in sight, so to speak.
Yeah.
And,
I've always thought that if you wanted to hide out in this country, you don't hide out in the bush where everyone knows everything, but you get lost in a city so easily.
Yes, yeah. I mean, some people had thought, in fact, he was hiding out in Karachi, but clearly I would think that senior members of the intelligence establishment in Pakistan must have known where he was, whether the political leadership and Zardari and so on actually knew anything about it is probably a bit more questionable. And as was mentioned, I think that Zardari, in fact, is a bit fortunate that he didn't know about the American operation, because he can claim that it was America. Well, he won't necessarily say that, but of course it'll be seen by many people that the government had no part in the assassination of bin Laden, so to some extent they're off the hook. But
Clive, some of us, you and I amongst them, are old enough to remember that the mission in Afghanistan was fairly narrowly focused. Yes, it was to defeat Al Qaeda, and it was to kill, or at least to imprison, bin Laden. Does this give Obama, apart from the obvious political bump in his own fortunes, does it give him an excuse to accelerate withdrawal?
Well, of course, the Americans have been saying that their involvement in Afghanistan is to do with the war on terror, but I frankly doubt that. I think that it's got very little to do with it. You know, we know that Al-Qaeda was probably down to about 200 people, and those people were involved in support activities and training activities. Of course, there was an element also that was involved in producing propaganda for the internet. But it was a fairly small group, and I don't think that whether the US was in Afghanistan or not, it would really have made a difference. I think, in fact, if there is not a US presence in Afghanistan or in the future they withdraw, I don't think it'll make a difference, because I think that the whatever accommodation there is in Afghanistan, and clearly there has to be some accommodation with the Quetta Shura Taliban, I think that they will probably be quite intolerant of foreigners, and it'll go back to business as usual in Afghanistan with the usual tribal disputes and disputes about narcotics and so on.
Well, Clive, if the mission isn't really about Al Qaeda, what, in your view, is it about?
Well, I think that the US perhaps feels strongly that it needs to be in Afghanistan to prevent it from becoming a holdout in the way that it was in the period before 9/11 for extremist groups. But I don't really think that's very credible myself. I think that if the US wasn't there, as I said, that it really wouldn't make a great deal of difference. The real problem is not Afghanistan, it's Pakistan, because these groups and other groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba, which also has a much broader vision than just South Asia, I think those are the groups that are a problem, and of course they're operating out of Pakistan. The training camps that Al-Qaeda has in Waziristan are being used to train foreigners. And again, it's in Pakistan that that training is going on.
This is Alan Nell on Radio National, and I was about to say, out of force of habit, Radio Australia, but we're not on Radio Australia anymore. So bye-bye, all you millions of Radio Australia listeners. You can't hear us. We're discussing the death of bin Laden with Professor Clive William from the ANU and Dr. Fazana Sheikh from Chatham House. Fazana, what does the death of this extraordinary fellow mean for young jihadists? Does he simply get exalted to the ultimate ranks of martyrs? Does he become, is he sort of sanctified, a bit like what's going on in the Vatican?
That's a nice way of putting it. Well, as I indicated earlier, that is to say, bin Laden does enjoy iconic status. There is no doubt about that. The question is, what is the scale of that support? And I think it's fair to say that globally, Muslim opinion remains deeply divided over someone like Osama bin Laden. But it's very difficult to establish exactly, the very many different aspects of this global Muslim opinion, because so much of it is distorted, as it were, because of fierce anti-US sentiment. Anti-US sentiment sometimes translates readily into what some people regard as a pro-Bin Laden stance. So, as I said, it's a difficult one. But I think leaving that to one side, it's also fair to say that, of course, most specialists of terrorist organizations do agree that Al-Qaeda operates more or less like a franchise. And as we've just heard Clive say, I think one of the big problems now is what the international community is going to do about groups that have spawned in Pakistan, groups closely allied to Al-Qaeda, groups that operate as part of that franchise, groups like the Haqqani faction, known to be based in North Waziristan, groups like the Lashkar-e-Tayyaba, which has strong bases in Punjab, and other sort of sectarian groups which have close links to Al-Qaeda. And I think the death of bin Laden is not necessarily going to address the problems posed by some of these groups, which can tend, in fact, to be extremely dangerous, as we have seen in the case of Lashkar-e-Tayyaba, which is, of course, widely implicated in the 2008 attacks on Mumbai.
Clive, let's the human factor in this is intriguing. Surely this suggests that there was some penetration of the inner circle, or at least it seems possible that the organization was penetrated to get to Osama bin Laden.
Well, the story that is circulating at the moment is that the U.S. managed to identify the courier that bin Laden was using to carry messages from the compound to the wider world. And eventually, once they had identified this person externally from the compound, they were able to track him back to the compound. Then they looked at the compound as to what it was, and then their suspicions were attracted to the fact that it was much more substantial than surrounding properties. It was more secure. It had no internet connections. People burned their rubbish rather than putting it out in the street, all those sorts of things, which tended to suggest that it was more than it seemed to be, and certainly more than a courier would need to live in, and it looked like it was the kind of place that somebody of importance would be at. I presume they would have also maintained UAV coverage of the area.
UAV?
Unmanned aerial vehicles or drones, so that they were able to ascertain over time how many people were there and what the sort of level of activity was. I doubt that bin Laden would have ever gone out in the open, but nonetheless...
He wouldn't have been doing laps in the pool, would he?
I don't think so.
Farzana, in a recent book, Michael Shue, the former chief of the CIA's bin Laden unit, wrote that his goal was to attack the West, then to move on to Arab states and Israel. Farzana, he's anticipated a war of attrition, one that might last decades, and, quote, so began passing the torch to younger activists. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, who are the young Turks waiting in the wings, but that colloquial expression might confuse people. Who are the youngsters waiting around to take the torch?
Well, I mean, Pakistan, as I said, does have quite a large number of groups operating as franchises, many of them with recruiting young, urban-based, really quite qualified men, mostly, from Pakistan's towns and cities. We've heard, of course, of Al-Awlaki, the Yemeni cleric. I think he's, probably sort of priming himself in some sense to take over from Osama bin Laden. So I think there is an understanding that there is, a sort of a young, sort of jihadi crowd out there, certainly in Pakistan, who are prepared to continue bin Laden's mission. The question is now, with the symbol gone and so publicly and dramatically eliminated, how much time will it take before they can mobilize their forces again to mount the kind of attack that we saw in 2001. I think that's the big question. But having said that, of course, in the meanwhile, I think what can be said with a degree of certainty is that there are bound to be revenge attacks. Certainly, in Pakistan, there will be an attempt to avenge bin Laden's death. And, you know, as always, ordinary Pakistanis will be caught in this crossfire.
Lady and gentlemen, I thank you for your time, Clive and Fazana. Professor Clive Williams, visiting fellow at the Strategic and Defence Studies Centre at the ANU. Clive's the author of Terrorism Explained, a Boomerang Books publication. Dr. Fazana Sheikh, Associate Fellow for the Asia Programme at Chatham House. Any number of books to her credit, including Making Sense of Pakistan, a Columbia University Press publication. And I was taken by her reference to Al-Qaeda as a franchise operation. And it's, I suddenly remembered that many, many years ago, I actually met Colonel Sanders. Now, he's, you know, was the figure in a large franchise organisation. He's been dead for yonks and they keep still opening them up. Late Night Live, which used to be on Radio Australia, but it's still on Radio National. Play a bit of music and we're going to whiz off, as we always do, to the Freud Conference.